Hello everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, recorded live at Birch Hanger Services on this fine Saturday afternoon. My name is Michael Bailey, I'm with Paddy David and David Freezer. We thought it'd been a while since we'd done a proper podcast, so we thought today would be the day to do it. Sadly, we seem to have stumbled upon a pretty wretched result, given that Norwich have just lost 4-0 at Millwall. I think all manner of reasons could be given for the other results we've had so far this season, Paddy, but this old 4-0 at Millwall job, we're a little bit thin on the ground, aren't we, for excuses?
No excuses, mate. Just no excuses. Definitely not no excuses there. No.
You can swear, I can beep it, it's fine.
No. Standards, Michael, standards. Yeah, no, it's I mean, it's only 2 or 3 hours after the game now, so it still probably needs a bit of distance to collect more considered thoughts. But ultimately, having seen all 5 games this season, the signs are very worrying, alarming. There's no real, I don't think there's any positives at all out of that one today, other than it could have been bigger than 4-0 defeat. Really, well, the head coach said he was ashamed. I think that probably sums it up perfectly, better than I could do. The question now is, moving forward, what next? Is it new players? Transfer window deadline is this coming Thursday. Is it getting players back? Tim Closer? Is it playing players in different positions or different formations? There's a lot of questions there, and he's got 2 weeks to find some answers over the international break.
Yeah, lucky man. And he will be missing some of his international players during that time, of course, but needs must. We tried to get the full and frank opinion of your good self over Facebook Live, didn't we, after the game at the Den, and I think it was trying to tell us to get out while you could. There's loads of other stuff, and that video also at pinken.com and the YouTube channel. Is there one thing that's, I know there's a collection of things, Pad, but what's the one thing that's most alarming for you, and even, you know, a bit more narrow than just defensively?
Yeah, I guess, as you say, there's a lot of strands to this at the minute, but it's just the general naivety, and that sadly involves the head coach, his coaching team, and those players. Some new, some not so new, some young, some old. It's almost like they just think that if they continue to pass the ball, that will outdo teams who, okay, are probably less gifted technically, but will physically run and close down and harry and press and do it high up the pitch, because there's enough evidence now emerging that this Norwich team are so vulnerable when they lose the ball in dangerous areas. Set pieces, the zonal thing, naive again, they're conceding so many goals that feel avoidable. And it is that, it's just, I suppose it is just naivety. It just feels like there's a naive preconception of how they were going to go about it at the start of the season, and if they've not already had a rude awakening, they got one today. So there needs to be massive changes in approach, philosophy maybe as well, or certainly a more streetwise edge to it. You know, it's almost like, well, we're going to play this way, this is the way to go, it's going to be bright and exciting and fresh. It might still all be all of those things, but at the minute, let's see a bit of pragmatism and a little bit of an acknowledgement what the championship's all about, because again today, so lightweight, and then bang bang, they're 2-0 down, and at that point you knew they're not coming back, because you knew they would concede more goals than they did, and all the trends are downward sadly at the minute.
Yeah, so easy to play against, absolutely. Dave, that was your first trip to the Den, how did you find it?
I don't want to do it again. Not if it ends like that, certainly.
No, quite. How about your good self then? Obviously, Pad's had his view of what's worrying him most. What worries you most?
Yeah, it's the approach more than anything, I think. I think there are some good players there. I think they've got to find a better balance. I think perhaps that they had intended to be playing three at the back with wing-backs by now, perhaps in a 3-4-3. That would seem to suit the players when you've got closer back. But it's the approach. Unfortunately for me, it seems like the attitude of that we largely saw under Alex Neil last season is still there, in that they're turning up at these places thinking that they're the better team already, thinking that they deserve to play good football, that they'll be able to do what they want to do, set the tone, and have their own way in the Championship. Now, Daniel Farke has had a real crash course in English football, and no more so than going to Millwall with a rowdy crowd who... and a team who are playing for their manager. They've got a club legend in charge who's got them up via Wembley through the playoff final in League One. They were all up for it, and Norwich were just overwhelmed. They did start off by playing some good football, and they were the better team before the goal. The Millwall keeper had made one good save from Wes Houlihan, and then one stupid mistake from Marcel Franken mistimes his jump. Bang, Lee Gregory's in, Angus Gunn is completely exposed, it's 1-0, and then they just crumble. And the worry is that they've turned up there thinking that's how we're going to play, when we all knew that Millwall were going to burst out of the traps like that. We knew it was going to be an intimidating place to go. So why was there not a more defensive approach taken to try and frustrate them and make sure that they couldn't overwhelm you like that? Because I said to you both after the game that looking at Steve Morrison, the way he led the line and the way he was... a focal point for them, it was literally like men against boys at times. He was brushing off Norwich players like they weren't there. It was like a year 11 pupil playing against year 7 pupils at times, and that's not good enough. So it's an approach, it's a mindset which Daniel Farke and his coaching staff very quickly have to prove they can get on top of.
Well, I'm sure we'll find some light at some point in this podcast, but we're just going to get, you know, we're going to keep going dark on the dark side, because that's the reality of where we are at this. What's getting me is they spent so much time in pre-season pad drilling them, getting this fitness into them so that they were going to be fitter, stronger, they were going to be able to run, and they're just not running, they're not chasing back, they're not getting in people's faces. There's no energy or tempo in that team. I mean, you can see them sometimes stepping up with the passes, but they sort of lollop around, and it's like the opposition wait for a mistake, because they know when they make it they're probably going to have a pretty decent chance of not only creating a chance but actually scoring a really gilt-edged chance.
Yeah, scouting reports going in, bouncing around the Championship at the minute, press high, set pieces, goals aplenty. That's it in a nutshell. So if you're Daniel Farke and you're supposed to be this astute, highly regarded development coach from Borussia Dortmund, no less, he must know that. Why isn't he counteracting it? Why are they blindly again trotting out the 4-1-4-1 Tetti on the bench? I know Rancic, Maddison, Houlihan, Reid, Murphy, that's a midfield who can get a hold of the game at Millwall. Not if the ball's going over their heads from front to back, direct, playing off Morrison, playing off Gregory. Again, keep coming back to it, naive from the top down. And you know, if it doesn't change, it's almost like the definition of madness is doing the same thing time after time and expecting a different outcome. I think Einstein was quoted with that. I might have misquoted him, but I think it is. So I'm pretty sure I trotted that one out. We're in the Alex Neil low points of last season. Well, I'm sorry, but again today, allied to the body of work we've already seen, it's not moved on from the Alex Neil era. They're still defensively weak. And Farke himself said after the game, you can see 12 goals now and counting in 5 games. You're not going to win games with that ratio. In fact, where you are going to be is where they are at the minute, sadly, which is in the bottom 3. Now, I'm not drawing any comparisons with the league table after 5 games, but are we seeing enough evidence that they're going to be anywhere other than the bottom half come December? Not for me. So massive reality check, this whole opening 5 league games. Can they now, penny finally drop with the people who it has to drop with, and we see some maturity and progression? Because today there wasn't any. Today it was again, we'll go out there, we'll dominate the ball, I know the stats, and if we dominate the ball we'll win X amount of games. Well, that's looking a very foolish comment now, that one after Sunderland, that with that level of possession in a block of 10 games you win 8, draw 1, lost 1. Well, I think he needs to go and have a look back at his data, because that isn't the case, and it clearly will not be the case. Because next away game, we just discussed it, Sheffield United, well, I guarantee what will be in store there will be more of the same from Millwall. It'll be get in their faces, press them high, get the crowd on our side, and damage them from set pieces. And sat here tonight, hours after the Millwall game, I don't expect anything other than the same outcome. So it's, but you know, if we want to put a positive spin on it, it's massively early days, and we're 5 games into 46. But I'm not seeing anything that suggests that this head coach or this set of players have got the antidote to a problem that they're going to face more often than not in the Championship.
I just remember sitting down, I can't remember where I said it, but I remember sitting down to watch the Channel 5 highlights last weekend at Sheffield United, Barnsley, and just thinking, and I think the Burton as well, just thinking, how on earth are they going to cope with this? And today was the first chance we got to see it. And now is obviously definitely not the time to mention that Alec Neil has managed to see his Preston side keep 4 clean sheets and only concede 1 goal in their first 5 Championship games. So instead, I'll introduce some quotes, shall I, from head coach Daniel Farke, a fairly distraught James Husband, who's very softly spoken in this, and also a former Canary known as Steve Morrison.
Yes, to be honest, conceding 12 goals after 5 games, it's much, much. So when you play like this in the defense, in this behavior, so normally it's not possible to win games. So the thing is, what helps a little bit is that we had some games we were really improved and defended well in Fulham and QPR, but we didn't do consistently enough, and that's what you have to do in this league, and yeah, we have to work on it, you know. So with after loss, so you can for sure, you have no arguments and you can change everything, but it was totally not about our holding midfielders. So to save this situation, it was especially about our defense behavior in the last row, and that's our topic. Two things: either I have to improve the players, or I have to find some other solution. I won't stand here and complain about the quality of the players or whatever. I need other players, so I'm happy to be allowed to work with these players I have, and it's up to me to improve them or to find some other solutions when we can't play. So in this style with 4 guys in a row, perhaps we have to defend that next time with 6 guys in the last row. So one is for sure. So we have to lower our numbers of defensive behavior mistakes in the last row, and yeah, it's up to me to find the solutions.
Where do I start? We have to take responsibility as players and a group of players that are new, but a lot of us played in this league before, we know what's about, and that was something I've never seen before. I think we've all got to take responsibility, including myself, to apologise firstly. There's no two ways getting around that. That was unacceptable. I mean, we have a way of playing and everything, and that's all good and fancy, but if we can't stop goals going in, then we're going to really struggle. Again, it's hard to really put into words. I'm disgusted in myself, all of us. I think we pride ourselves on, when we were younger, pulling out performances that people remember, and that was something that we'll never ever forget, put it that way.
Steve, you must be delighted. I mean, does it mean anything more to get a result like that against your former club?
No, it just means a lot, because we've been playing so well, and we've been playing like that. That performance there has been no better than the other performances we've been putting in this year. And we've just lacked the goals, and today everything's come together, and yeah, it was a very good performance against a very good Norwich team, and we knew that if we played to our strengths and physical against them, we didn't think they'd be able to deal with it, because they're a very nice team and very nice to watch. But yeah, obviously you can see what happened out there. I think we ran all over them, to be honest.
Yeah, that physicality, I guess, was the big difference between the two sides, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, obviously, that's just the way we like to play. We like to sit in, we like to let you have the ball and try and break us down, and then we'll hurt you when we've got it. So, yeah, we've got a way of playing football, and it works for us, so we're going to continue doing it.
And it seemed the way you guys pressed high at times, I think when the goal kicks, yeah, or whichever, you know Norwich are going to play out of the back, and you're almost trying to force mistakes at that point, I guess.
Yeah, obviously we want you to try and play out with our players high, and if you do, then we'll pounce on the mistakes. And obviously, ideally, we want you to kick it long, because if you kick it long, you kick it into our strengths, which is our 2 centre-halves, who love heading the ball. So, yeah, it worked out well for us today, and yeah, it's something that we've deserved after our performances this season.
And would it be fair to say you guys would be delighted to finish above Norwich this season? I mean, you've obviously just come back into the division, but you've been around it before.
If you finish above Norwich, you'll be safe in this league. So we know that. That's something we'll be aiming to do. But we've shown this season so far, barring a few results, that we're a very, very good team, and we should stay in this league if we play like that every week.
And I don't know how much was going over your head while you were playing, but Russ got a bit of stick today. It's been a pretty tricky time for him, I think. Are you still keeping in touch with some of the guys there? And
yeah, obviously people need to find a scapegoat, and it seems to be Russ. I don't know why. It wasn't a fault for any of the goals, and so there's a load of other players out there as well, and obviously he's an easy target because he's the captain, and he's been there a long time. He's got big shoulders, he'll be able to deal with it, but obviously I think a few other people need to have a look at themselves in that dressing room.
Do you think they'll be alright, Norwich, this season?
Well, they should be with the attacking talent they've got, but it was interesting to see they were 3-0 down, 4-0 down, and just continued to do the same thing, didn't change it, so maybe from to maybe need a plan B.
Cheers, man. No worries,
thank you.
Now, the one thing we didn't get to talk about in our videos was the captain, which I think is a subject that's probably going to come up, Russell Martin. I need to see the goals back again personally to work out if he was at fault and what his role was in the goals. I don't know off the top of my head. Nothing immediately springs to mind that it was definitely a Russell Martin error that led to a goal per se. But, you know, as soon as the first goal went in, I think, was it? Or maybe it was the second, he was being booed by a fair amount of the away fans. This is obviously a continuation of what Russell's had to deal with. And in terms of the views of Norwich fans, who basically put years of defensive frailties down to the skipper who's had to lead the troops. So, Dave, how do you see all this?
Yeah, well, from memory, the first goal had nothing to do with Russ. It was Marcel Franke who got it wrong. And Angus Gunn's completely exposed. Second one, without seeing about, like you say, Russ may have been at fault with the ball coming across and Angus Gunn having to come out, but Russ was then the man on the line trying to keep the ball out, I believe. And the third goal, he was involved for that one, wasn't he? He was the man who came out to try and block the shot from Wallace, but it went under him, or he didn't get to it, and it, you know, maybe Angus Gunn has been beaten too easily from that range, from the edge of the box. But when those boos first came, there was definitely a noticeable turn from Russ. He turned around and was like, are they for me? Because he I think you're right, I think that was after the first goal. You know, he specifically, that was the third goal, was it? He specifically didn't necessarily need to take the brunt of what had happened from those three goals. They were all as bad as each other defensively, the back four. Ivo Pinto didn't defend anywhere near as well enough. James Husband has again had another underwhelming game. And Marcel Franke just doesn't look like he's stepped up to that level at all. But that pent-up frustration is there with Russ, isn't it? And he got targeted, and it wasn't nice. And I think when he went off the pitch, he was quite happy to trot off, to be perfectly honest. He didn't look too steamed to be being substituted. So it wasn't nice. And I would suggest it probably means we're heading towards Russ being out of the team once Tim Closer is fit.
I mean, clearly massive issues in terms of midfield protection, although Daniel Farker did kind of hang a lot of it on his defensive line. I mean, it can be sometimes, certainly for people watching the game in the stand, that the guy who's closest to the shot tends to get blamed for the goal sometimes, or if he's done something closest to it. But what do you make of it all, Pat?
Yeah, I don't think, because Dave's dissected it, Russell Martin's treatment is about his hours shift at Millwall. I think he is the poster boy, because he's the guy who's been there under Alex Neil, previous regimes, and there's always been this undercurrent with him. He's not a centre back, he's a right back. He's not big enough, he doesn't command opposition centre forwards enough, and that is always there. It's never very far from the surface, and he knows that himself. He's acknowledged that himself. So I just think, unfortunately, he is in the category of, now he is tainted as part of a failing regime last season. He is the captain, so we always have this infernal debate about leadership. Is there any leaders on the pitch? How you define leadership, I'm not sure, but if people have this preconceived notion that it's John Terry-esque shouting and bawling, and that's not Russell Martin, it never has been, but you know, it flows into this. Whenever the wheels come off, it's like, well, who's out there? Who's actually corralling the troops and what have you? And you know, ultimately, I think he's been around to the extent where now he's basically seen as part of the furniture and part of the problem. And it's a very difficult one to manage that now, because conversely, both Farker and Webber have talked up what a brilliant conduit he is for the rest of the squad, how much he cares, what a model professional he is, and he's probably all of the above, but ultimately he's only should be getting a place in the 11 if he's good enough in terms of his footballing ability. And there's a significant and growing amount of Norwich fans who don't think that's the case. So the head coach is going to now find with these type of results that a lot of the credit is going to drain away very quickly, and if he continues to stand four square behind Russell Martin, then he's going to find it might even drain even quicker than he expects. So it's a very, very difficult situation that now. I'm not sure how we move on from here, other than, as Dave says, maybe he's going to have to dip him out of the team. To be fair, there was one of the five games I don't think he did start, so and off the top of my head I can't think which one that was, but he was definitely on the bench for one of those league games. So Farker has shown a willingness to, if he feels the situation dictates it, not to automatically put Russell Martin on the team sheet. But you know, it was Russell Martin who was coming off after the hour mark, wasn't it? It wasn't Marcel Franca, so that in itself tells you a story, I think.
QPR, was it? Was it? I think QPR, because Pinto pulled up again in that one, didn't he, late on? I think.
On, yeah. I think the only game that's kept a clean sheet. We'll leave it there.
We will leave it there. I think that is going to rumble on. It's rumbled on enough, but it will continue to rumble on. I guess the only really impending thing, given it's Birmingham at Carrow Road next in a fortnight's time when Norwich return after the international break, between now and then is transfer deadline day and the remaining pieces of the window. We've got sort of two facets here, and you've kind of touched on it, Pat, the idea that who do Norwich want to bring in to help steady a ship that is possibly rocking a little bit. You've got Yapstam deciding that now would be a good time to make public that they still want Nelson Oliveira, which just seems like mischief making, to be honest. And you know, oh hang on, it's not going very well at Norwich for Nelson, let's put that back out there. There's just a couple of, you know, horrible little facets at work here, and it's again another challenge certainly for Stuart Webber and for Daniel Farker too.
Yeah, these are now massive decisions now in the next few days, because you take Daniel Farker at face value. On Friday afternoon, on the eve of going to Millwall, he said he's happy with his squad now. He doesn't envisage you doing any more business, and on we go with the guys under his command. I'm sorry, but they need to bring people in. I mean, they brought the lad Raggett in, who's man of the match apparently this afternoon for Lincoln, who is a big unit who I'm pretty sure wouldn't be getting a monster the way Franca, Zimmerman and Martin have been this season already. Okay, he might be raw, he might have been playing part-time football 12 months ago, but if you'd have stuck him in that Norwich back line today, I don't think he'd have done any worse than the ones who were playing. Yeah, they've obviously, possibly more so from Lincoln's point of view, but that he's had to go back there until the new year. So I just think defensively they could do with bringing somebody in. Now if they hadn't planned to do it, then it's very difficult to start from a standing start at this point of the window to actually go out and bring the people in. Whether they reinvestigate, you know, the lad Salter Clark at Chelsea, that type of loan deal, whether they can now do something like that in the days that remain. But also there's another dimension to that, and I just think it would give these fans a boost now. Between now and Thursday, they actually went and brought a player or two in. I just think that would give them a lift, rather than it's something that the head coach and the sporting director feel is essential. I don't think that would be the worst thing to do, just in terms of, yeah, we hear you, we can see it, we know ourselves it's not good enough, we're trying to do something about it. Conversely, if it gets to Thursday 11 p.m. and they haven't brought anybody else in, and heaven forbid they've had to like take the money for Nelson, I think it'd be a batten down the hatches job then. I really do.
Yeah, it'd be interesting who we hear from. I think if we hear, you know, I'm not calling on anyone to say anything, but I always think it's interesting if people will, you know, if Stuart Webber fancies talking, if someone fancies saying something. I always think that's interesting when they make those decisions. I mean, Dave, what do you want? What do you want to see them bring in? I mean, what do they need to bring in? Because they've made, as you've said and written on your monster whiteboard chart at work and the office, and you flipped over the page, you know, we're on two pages here of changes. Yeah. Had mentioned on the video earlier this afternoon, 31 personnel in and out.
Yeah, I don't want to see any more German second tier players for the moment.
What about the good ones?
Well, I'm sure there may well be good ones. What I we're seeing, I don't know the German second tier particularly well. I presume none of us really do, and I've never watched a German second tier game to my knowledge. I've seen Bundesliga games. I've obviously seen German teams in Europe, but as we all know here, the three of us sat on this table have seen a lot of Championship football in our life, and we know the Championship is a very different beast to the Premier League, which is why it's so difficult for teams to make that transition and to survive, isn't it? So what sort of standard is the German second tier? How different is it to the Bundesliga? How does it compare to the Championship here? Because at the moment, it's looking like, I mean, if you look at that team today, there's no one in there who's a particularly experienced Championship player. You're looking at, even Russell Martin hasn't played much football in the Championship. He's obviously played Premier League. Josh Murphy is probably one of the most experienced, but you've got German second tier players with some youngsters in Angus Gunn, James Maddison, who haven't played much at all. You've got Mario Vrančić, who's swanning around as if he has absolutely no idea what was about to hit him. He looks very good on the ball, obviously, but out of possession, it's just not good enough. Hopefully the penny will drop with him. But the question you put to me was, what would I like to see them bring in? Would be some just hardcore Championship experience. Someone who has been there, done it, 6-7 years, whatever, majority of their career in the Championship for a solid club and has performed well. I haven't got any names on the top of my head, but say someone like, it's going to be too expensive. I'm trying to think of someone who's going to be in their price range. I was going to say like Aidan Flint at Bristol City, but he's going for quite big money, isn't he, supposedly? So, somebody who's got good Championship experiences understands that when you go to Millwall and when you go to Sheffield United, it's going to be hard. You've got to play the underdog role, you've got to frustrate them, and you've got to try and nick something. You're not going to swan up to those places week in, week out and embarrass them and play football around them and not get kicked. It's the English Championship and it's going to be rough, and you're going to come up against guys like Steve Morrison. So unless they get more streetwise and players who are more streetwise, then I'm not sure what they're going to, not sure what the future's going to be. Because if you look at Marco Stieperman, when he came on today, he looks like a player who's got talent, doesn't he? But where, I don't know where he was playing, I don't know what position he was playing, and he just looks very much an individual. So is he the sort of player that's going to make them a more solid Championship unit? I'm not sure. So perhaps you need some more glue to stick everything together.
I could play devil's advocate and say, but the philosophy is not about having an established Championship team, but I'm not going to go along that line. Instead, Pat, I'm going to say to you, Daniel Farker on Friday, I think I probably asked you this once already, he stipulated what he wanted from his side out of possession very eloquently, and we didn't see a drop of that today. So why is that? Is that because he can't get that out of his players? Is it because the players he has got, he isn't picking the right ones to achieve that? Or what is, it seems like such a contradiction.
It's both, isn't it? I mean, if that's the message which he conveyed to us in quite clear terms, is he not imparting that to his players? Do they not understand that when they don't have the ball, they need to absolutely, as Millwall did, as QPR, as Sunderland have done, the pressing that these teams are putting on Norwich high up the pitch is in stark contrast to Norwich, who are played through the thirds with absolute ease. And then conversely, then the spaces, as much as we've dug out a few of the defenders, and that's probably fair game when you can succeed in 12 goals in 5 games, but they're getting no protection whatsoever from the midfielders. It's literally like, you look at that, it's a team in name only. It's just individuals. There's no cohesive units. The defence, the midfield, the forward line, totally disconnected. And that, ultimately, the fault for that lies with the head coach. And it's not good enough now. I'm getting a bit sick and tired of this work in progress and patience. He's now been in this club for 3 months or so. He's had a full month of Championship football, and yet still today they're making the same naive mistakes and assumptions that they can turn up at Millwall with a midfield like that, full of creative players. It's that old, it is a cliche, but you've got to earn the right to play. If you want to absolutely batter teams with your greater technical ability, fine. But first, establish a platform in the game. Get a foothold. Be in the game 0-0, 1-0 up, whatever. 60 minutes on the clock. That game today, that game is gone after 17 minutes. They're 2-0 down. The game is absolutely over. If they'd have just sat in, shown a bit of respect to Millwall. You know, Millwall haven't got better players for pound, but they're a cohesive unit, and they're a club moving forward under Harris. You can see that coming up the way they did through the playoffs. I mean, they finished sixth in League One, so to actually come through the playoffs and then continue on this season, they've not been put away in any of their Championship games, even though they hadn't won prior to today. It had all been the odd goal that they'd fell the wrong side of. Show them a bit of respect at their place as well. Stay in the game, and then professionally, as the game develops, the game will open up, then your more creative players will get on the ball, their crowd will get anxious, they'll start to retreat because they haven't won a game all season, and then the doubts start to surface again. We saw none of that because the game was done and dusted after 17 minutes, and I keep coming back to it, naive. Norwich are naive, they're a soft touch, and they're easy to play against at a minute, and if those things don't change swiftly, this is going to be a long old season.
I think that's absolutely the perfect way to end this podcast, and we can all sit and think about what we've done for 2 weeks. Thank you very much, Paddy, Tom and Dave. Don't forget, pinken.com will keep you up to date throughout the international break. Of course, on deadline day two, the Pinken show will be about for you in midweek on Wednesday night. And then we are back again for Birmingham's visit to Carrow Road, which will be very interesting. But of course, yeah, deadline day is Thursday night, and we'll see what business Norwich do then.
Will we see Seb Bassong in the Birmingham lineup?
No, let's save that for another podcast. Cheers, gents. Thanks all for listening, and we'll be with you again soon. Bye for now.